This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. If you want to listen live, all you have to do is download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Also, if you want to catch this show on video, be sure to check out Zumo TV, channel 719. That's where you can find SportsGrid's Fantasy Sports Network. Enjoy the show, and thanks so much for listening.
Get on the grid, Sports Grid. I am Gabe Morenci, and I am on the grid, and obviously you are too if you're checking us out right now. We appreciate you joining us. We are joined by George Kurtz. How you doing, George?
I'm doing well, Gabe. Always happy to be here with you.
Well, you know what, George? It was instead of March Madness, it's been more a month of March sadness. And, of course, We lost the NCAA tournament. We've lost regular season hockey, basketball, and everything else. But, you know, we get another kick in the teeth, another punch in the gut, so to speak, because Major League Baseball would be upon us right now. But we do have some news. Now, when I say news, Major League Baseball, the owners met. They did a conference call with the players, and I like that Major League Baseball says that they want to start on June 1st. As I did, I was unaware, actually. I knew that Rob Manfred was clueless when it comes to investigating cheating scandals, but I didn't know that Rob Manfred had this type of power over a pandemic, George, that he was able to wave a wand and state that they're planning on starting June 1st. Now, that's not their official plan, but that's the guideline that they're working on right now that they're hoping that they could pull off right now. And I say that's like with an assumption with no fans. Like, they're not even considering having fans. So, like, any plans of playing the games would be with no fans. At least, like, that's the starting point. Yet, Shapiro, who's the president of the Blue Jays, came out, general manager, you know, head of baseball operations, etc., came out and said that teams will need 1 month to get ready again. They'll need another month to get ready for any season. Even if it's a shortened season, they'll still need a month to get ready. So I'm hopeful. I hope I'm wrong, but I think it's a false hope to believe that baseball will be starting June 1st.
Oh, I agree with you. I think July 1st is a much more realistic timetable. Even that, I don't know if can happen. I mean, you mentioned it's not just baseball players that have to play, but people have to work at the arena, right? You're going to need workers there. What about when you travel? You're going to need people at hotels. You're going to need people at the airport. You know, I don't know if this can be handled. They're already talking something. They mentioned that teams in New York, be the Yankees and the Mets, they would play their home games not in New York because, once again, there could be an issue there. You know, I watched the interview with Manfred on ESPN last night. And he wouldn't give anything concrete about how many games are going to be played. He did mention doubleheaders. But I think, are they just giving false hope? I know the owners want to make their money, but I can't see June 1st happening. It's not just baseball that they need to participate. They need so many other things, other people, regular workers. And are they going to get those people to cooperate too and go to work with this virus still rampant?
No, you're exactly right. And that's, you know, something that a lot of sports fans don't really think of. When I tell people, I'm like, guys, to host a sporting event, you need multiple paramedics and ambulances. Just on a normal event, George, people get hurt. You know what I'm saying? Like, fans get hurt. Someone collapses. Someone has a heart attack. You need, you know, anyone who's been to a professional sporting event knows there's law enforcement there, right? That's by law. You can't have 20,000 people in a place and have like one cop, right? So by law, you have to have a certain amount of police officers. And the infrastructure is going to be overwhelmed and too busy for the cops to show up to an Angels Athletics game. And you know, and it's a good point too. Like, different pockets of the country are going to be worse than others. It doesn't mean there's going to be a plague everywhere for the rest of eternity. But then what? And then are the Yankees and the Mets and these teams just going to start to agree, okay, yeah, we'll play in Arizona? And what about a schedule too, George? I was thinking about this. And I know me and Mike Blewett talked about this on a podcast a bit, and it's come up on a couple of occasions. Now, think about this. So let's say that they come back. What's the schedule, George?
From what I've heard, is the schedule is going to be the schedule. They're not going to change what the schedule is now.
So how unfair and imbalanced is that? So that's just a roll of the dice right now then, right? You might play the Red Sox and Yankees 17 times. Hey, too bad. I get the Orioles 13 times.
Right. That's what, I mean, they can redo it, but the problem is, remember, they got to get arena availability. Maybe that arena wasn't available in August because of the Democratic National Convention, whatever the hell is going on.
Stadium, you know, concert, let's call them stadiums, George, in baseball. We call them stadiums.
But that's going to be an issue as well. That's why, from what I've heard, the schedule is going to be the schedule. But also, you mentioned one thing. You can play one team in an inordinate amount of times, a bad team over a good team, or vice versa. But also, what if you have a 20 home games in the second half and only you're playing 40
that's
road?
What I'm saying.
Are they going to fix that? I mean, these are all, okay, yeah, I'll lose all that money.
No. Like, and from a competitive balance, I guarantee you, at some point, the general manager is going to say, you know what? F this. Screw this. I'm not doing this. We're not playing under this. We're not doing these rules. Like you said. So what? Let's say they play 88 games. And what? Let's say one team plays, you know, 50 home games out of the 88. And they play 38 on the road only. And then you're the rival. Like, if you're the St. Louis Cardinals, and let's say you have to play 55 times on the road and the Cubs are only playing 44 times on the road. I have a major problem with that.
I do wonder this. I think they're going to play in the month of October regular season games. So I wonder, obviously, there's no schedule for that. They'll have to make that up. I guess that's where they're going to try and, yeah, I guess, get the accuracy back.
I've said
back
it before, too. Baseball is unique where you can have the playoffs on a neutral field. You know what I mean? Because you can't play baseball. Let's say the Yankees made the World Series. You can't have the World Series November 27th in the Bronx. No. You know what I'm saying? But it might be, listen, everyone agrees to this before. We're going to have the World Series in Los Angeles this year. You know, like, we're having it where the Angels play. Everyone knows. So it's like college football. Like, this is where we're playing the bowl game. You know, you'll get the same allotment of tickets. If you want to go, make the trip. I don't know what to tell you. But, you know, that's if there's fans at this point in time. Like I said, we're getting ahead of ourselves, but baseball, at least, they're talking. Manfred showed up and said something that they're hoping for June 1st. That's not happening, guys. And I also found it interesting that he said that the players have agreed to accelerate the schedule to play more doubleheaders, which they would, there would be two doubleheaders a week along the way. So, you know, George, you know, I want baseball and I'll take anything they give us. But at some point, you know, this thing's really going to be bastardized so much, it's going to be a joke.
Oh, I agree. It's going to be a weird season. I mean, they're going to have to, they got to redo the rules, right? Because we're going to do two doubleheaders a week. I don't think they're going to get that month of spring training. It'll maybe be 3 weeks. Somewhere around there.
Ask you, George. So let's say you're going to tell the players, oh, yeah, we're doing two doubleheaders a week now. And don't forget the new rule that we just invented. That's the stupidest thing ever, that pitcher needs to face three batters, too.
And we're going to tax them.
Yeah, no, exactly. If you have to say, no. We're not going to any of these new rules if we're playing in this weird season like this.
Yeah, I would agree. That rule has to be gone. I think rosters would have to be expanded to at least 28.
Yes.
To make up the doubleheaders, to get the pitchers safer. And I think the players could somehow, maybe they want even higher to go to 30.
You know, I would push for 30.
Yeah, I would push for 30 as well, get extra pitchers in there. I mean, what are you going to do? You going to have doubleheaders? Are you going to split it up on Wednesday and Sunday?
Yeah.
And once again,
Tuesday night, Sunday type thing. Yeah, Wednesday, Sunday. Yeah, it'll be Sundays for sure.
But something else that has to become, if you're going to do Sundays, how's ESPN going to handle that?
Or you know what? It'll be Saturday because Sunday's the getaway day.
You're right.
It would be Saturdays. Saturdays at 1, Saturday at nighttime.
But then Fox has to agree to that because they have exclusive rights during the season.
Oh, yeah. And Fox also has exclusive rights to Big Ten football that they have on Saturdays that will do a hell of a lot better than baseball will.
Yeah.
Like, suddenly it just becomes this, man, like, as sports fans, hopefully we get this overload of sports. You know what I mean? hopefully it's just like it's an overwhelming and there's all these sports back. But I mean, I got to tell you, there's already talk right now, George, of college football being worried. That's September.
Well, wouldn't you have to worry more about college football? I mean, you're dealing with younger players, you know, not professionals there. So I can see where the people are all worried. Listen, I don't know if sports are coming back this year at all, as far as anything. I don't think nobody does. We hope it does.
No, we don't know.
All right, we hope. I hope it does. I know you hope it does. We all do. But I have no idea what's going to happen. And for all I know, you're going to have a weekend in September where the NFL opens, college football opens, the NHL Stanley Cup's being played, the NBA Championship is being played.
Oh, yeah, the Kentucky Derby September 5th now, too.
Right. Maybe the Masters will be played in September. We don't know. You can have all sorts of events going on all at once because that's what's going to happen. When they do figure this out, everything's going to start at once, and it can be completely wild, but nobody knows.
No, it's wow. That's the thing. None of us can predict the future right now. We hope for the best. If we all take care of ourselves the best that we possibly can, we'll get out of this the quicker. Yet the worst is yet to come. And there's so many conflicting reports. You know, Trump wants things to be regular by Easter. That's not happening, sir. Like, I'll tell you right now, it's not happening. Baseball's major waving his wand. Hey, June 1st, please, pandemic, please go away. June 1st, it's like, you know, and college football of all people are suddenly like freaking out because, as you just stated, they're like, we can't put a bunch of kids on like a campus and like, what are we going to do? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and there could be pockets that pop up in other parts of the country 6 months from now, George, you know what I'm saying? And then what? Like, there's, we're in uncharted waters here, literally and figuratively. Okay, so one thing we know, the NFL draft is going on right now. They're going on as planned. They're going to hold the draft. It's not in Las Vegas anymore. It's not going to be flashy. They're going to do it out of TV studios. Players are going to be at their homes. At least that's the tentative plan right now. So I've enjoyed it. I did a podcast last week, George, and I shared some of my favorite Twitter follows. And, you know, I was talking about, you know, Rex Chapman and the Super 70 Sports site, which is a great one. A lot of fun, that one. Spencer Dinwiddie's a great follow on the Brooklyn Nets if you want to get a little bit more political. And, you know, Dinwiddie's not an act. Like, Dinwiddie has opinions on everything. Like, you know what I mean? But one thing I found fun is I saw Bradley Beal, a Washington Wizards star. He was like, come on, man, where with Cam Newton? Like, he's talking like a fan. He wanted the Atlanta Falcons to get rid of Matt Ryan and get Cam Newton. And I see a lot of other football players and athletes on Twitter right now because they have more time, too. And which leads me in to an NFL Twitter beef. And when I saw, oh, man, Davante Adams and Keenan Allen have a Twitter beef going on, I'm thinking, come on, guys, we're in the middle of a pandemic here. What are you guys arguing about? But it's not like a fight, George. You know what I mean? They were talking about who they think the top five best ever wide receivers are. And you and I are the same. I don't really concern myself with this stuff. Like, I don't panic about MVP awards, you know, the awards. Unless I'm an agent and I'm getting a cut, what do I care if you win the trophy or not? You know what I'm saying? Like, and, you know, best ever stuff, it's so subjective. But I do find it interesting when it's actual guys, number one, that are good. Number two, guys that are currently in the league. And number three, guys that played that position. So this isn't like Colin Cowherd that started a best ever wide receiver debate. These are good wide receivers. And Davante Adams and Keenan Allen. Robbie, and I like how Robbie Anderson gets his name in here. Robbie Anderson saying, I got my top five too. So just for the record, Davante Adams says the best ever five receivers in National Football League history, Randy Moss, Jerry Rice, Marvin Harrison, Calvin Johnson, and Julio Jones. Interesting. Ooh. That Davante Adams, a current player, says that Julio Jones, a guy in the league now, is amongst the top five greatest of all time. Keenan Allen of the Chargers agrees on Randy Moss, agrees on Jerry Rice, agrees on Calvin Johnson, goes down a different path, says Terrell Owens and Larry Fitzgerald.
Oh, that's my five.
I got to tell you, that's not a bad five that Keenan Allen has.
I've got the same five as Allen. I've got the same exact five. Not in that order that he listed, but the same exact five. Rice, Moss, Owens, Allen, Kellen, and Fitzgerald.
Okay, so let's just get Robbie Anderson's list in here for the record. Robbie Anderson, Randy Moss, Jerry Rice. These aren't in order. It's just, you know, top five, your five guys. Moss, Rice. Robbie Anderson goes a completely different route here. Ocho Cinco, Chad Johnson. That's ridiculous. Chad Johnson was a very, 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 very good player. Nowhere near amongst in the conversation of best ever, George.
No. He was entertaining. He was fun for a while with his little antics after the touchdowns and the golf putts with the goal foamy things and all that. But he's not top five. I can give him top 20, top 25.
Robbie Anderson gives some love for Steve Smith.
He's not someone I considered either. Once again, very good.
Steve Smith was great, but not like, you know what I mean? He's not amongst the great greats. You know, there's a difference here.
I don't know if Steve Smith would have been top five in the NFL at his, just a current NFL place when he played in any one year. Maybe he just barely considers it, gets in there every now and then, but never near the top. It's certainly not a Hall of Fame worthy.
Just because he was so respected amongst players, you know, he was. He was so tough.
Did he fight so many of his own teammates?
I know, you know, exactly. He wasn't like, come on. You know, Robbie Anderson, your list blows. And he's got Antonio Brown on his list. Right. Randy Moss, Jerry Rice, Ocho Cinco, Steve Smith, Antonio Brown.
All right, well, I'm throwing that list out.
Yeah, I almost don't want to sign Robbie Anderson now if I'm a team. I'd be like, man, this guy looks up to Antonio Brown and Ocho Cinco too much. I don't know. And Steve Smith. Weird list there. So you say you like Keenan Allen's list. Randy Moss, Jerry Rice, Terrell Owens, Calvin Johnson, Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah, that was the exact same five I have. Not in the order, but the exact same five I had. Fitzgerald was the one that I didn't think anybody would come up with. I think he deserves it. I mean, I give him, and I know he's a great player, but he hasn't always played with the greatest of quarterbacks, especially at the tail end of his career here. Maybe things get better with Kyler Murray now. But he's also always done it the right way. He's never been an I-me guy. Look at me. Look what I did. You know, and I respect the hell out of him for that.
It's amazing the longevity that Larry Fitzgerald has had. And not just longevity, but the elite level that he continues to play at. You know, that's what's amazing. You know, he's had a second career. Well, let's say a third and fourth career in the slot as of late. And don't think that having D-Hop there is not going to help Fitz again.
Oh, it's definitely going to help Fitz. Kyler Murray, I mean, I like those prop bets for him winning MVP. My only thing is, I think to win MVP, you got to get into the playoffs. And I don't know, even with the extra playoff team, if the Cardinals can squeak in there. But I love what that offense is going to do this year.
You know, I look at this, and I'm surprised there's a guy that, you know, there's a couple of guys. And for me, listen, this is a tough debate for me. There's a lot of great wide receivers. And let's go with, you know, we're going with the modern era here. Are we even going to get into the 70s, guys? You know, I don't know.
Different game.
Yeah, when I was a kid, man, Stallworth and Swan, man, you know what I mean? Both were pretty awesome receivers. You know who's a guy that's no one talking about? Art Monk, man. Art Monk was damn good, bro, with the Redskins.
Isn't Art Monk sort of yesteryear's Larry Fitzgerald? A guy who got the job done each and every year. It didn't bring a lot of histrionics to himself. You didn't even notice
him. No drama with Art Monk.
No drama. What, didn't he have that catch thing with so many games in a row? Play with a whole bunch of different quarterbacks, Theismann, Ripon, and stuff like that.
Won Super Bowls.
Right, he won. They were a very good team, yeah. And they weren't a throwing team. You know, they were 50-50 with John Riggins back in the day. Washington was never an air it out, throw it over time.
He's Art Monk, man. The guy would get open and he'd make the catch. He was one of the all-time greats. I'm not saying top five, but I'm saying, you know, when I was thinking of it, I'm like, you know, Art Monk belongs in a conversation at least.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn, and most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The grid, sports grid. I'm on the grid, and I am Gabriel Moretti. We're throwing it down with George Kurtz. So much stuff we were going to get to. Me and Cam did our favorite player by position for hockey, George. I know you'd get excited about that. So, yeah, we got to get your team. I don't know. Maybe we'll do that next time we get together. Or we're going to squeeze it in quickly hereafter. But talking wide receivers right now, as we talked about Devontae Adams and Keenan Allen, got a debate going on Twitter, and people are jumping in. All in on this. And I'll tell you, George, there's no debate about Jerry Rice, right? Jerry Rice is sort of known. He's the Pope of NFL wide receivers. Like, Jerry, when people, he's the Michael Jordan, so to speak. Like, when people say who's the best wide receiver ever, you know, 9 out of 10 people polled will tell you Jerry Rice, right?
Your list starts at Rice and goes down from there.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way
it's sort of, there's a difference too. Like, there's Jerry Rice, and then it's sort of, there's a couple of steps below, and then it begins. And the thing about Jerry Rice, the thing about Jerry Rice is, wasn't the strongest guy, wasn't the fastest guy, wasn't, you know what I mean? Sort of, he was the complete package all around. You know, that's what made him so dynamic.
I think what's great about Rice is when you do a list like this, if you do it at any position, we might argue who the best is at any one position, quarterback, running back, defensive player, whatever, but not at wide receiver. I say it's Rice and then everybody else after that. And you mentioned it. He wasn't very fast. He wasn't very strong. He was fluid. He was fluid as all hell. And he played with two outstanding quarterbacks in Montana and Young. Yeah. And you can't take anything away from him. I was a Cowboy fan back then, and I hated Jerry Rice.
You know, he was going to get open. Like, it was just one of those. It's like, yeah, you're not stopping him, man. Like, double team him, triple team, doesn't, you know, whatever. He was part of a great team. But it wasn't like, you know, he was a hanger-on. Like, he made them great. Like, you can, like, put it this way. Like, he was the best player on the best team. You know what I'm saying? Like, yes, Joe Montana was great, but there was a debate. Is Joe Montana the greatest ever? Well, he won, but Joe was a small guy. And, you know, there's no debate with Jerry Rice. Like, he was the best player on the best team. You could argue, though, at the positions. Ronnie Lott might be the best safety of all time.
Yes, he very
Joe
well
Montana. Might. Probably, you know, best quarterback of all time. I'd give the nod to Brady, but I don't have a problem with it. I had Montana number one before Brady did what he did.
I know it's getting a little off topic, but if you were taking a quarterback today from the start of his career, anybody quarterback in history, you think at the start of his career to have your team, Gabe Morency owns a team, what quarterback are you drafting? Would Tom Brady be that guy you would draft, an immobile quarterback?
No.
It wouldn't be mine either. No, it would be. I as far as today quarterback, I'd probably want Aaron Rodgers, a guy who's mobile, can get out of the pocket.
I hate to be such a Johnny come lately, but I'll go on Mahomes.
Okay, I can't argue that either.
Yeah, I'm saying.
Right. Brett Favre would come fine. He could move. Yeah. But it wouldn't be Tom. And I love Tom. I don't love him, but I have all the respect in the world.
Yeah, but that's the thing. All these guys, like Tom Brady, you know, was a skinny dude, showed up at a combine, goes in the sixth round. And it's a good point. Like, if you look at Jerry Rice, Mississippi Valley Delta State type thing, you know what I mean? If Jerry Rice was at the combine in this year's combine, in this year's draft, and the deepest ever wide receiver, Jerry Rice would probably be ranked 15th on their board,
right,
George. 17th.
Third, fourth round.
They'd be like, oh, he's nowhere near as fast as this kid from Alabama. Look, he's not as strong as this guy. Oh, he didn't do a great 40 at the combine. Ah, he went to Mississippi Valley Delta State. We'll go down the list. They would be wrong again, George. They'd make the same mistake again on these guys.
I completely agree with you. 100% agree with you. They wouldn't get this right because they look at these men, right. They look at speed. They look at speed, size, how big you are, how fast is always a huge thing. Oh, he runs the 4.3 40. We want him. You know, and they don't realize that talent doesn't always equate to that. Okay, it's not so, like see Olympic sprinters playing wide receiver in football.
This is why, and I don't care because I know, and this it's tough for me to make the list, and I don't care because people are just you're nuts with this one, but I'm surprised he didn't get more love from you. And I was looking at lists. I'm not gonna lie, I was looking before overnight and stuff. Let's you know different what people are saying.
That was on.
And I was surprised to see Michael Irvin as low on some lists, like 13, 17, 19, in the teens. He seems to be in the teens quite a bit. And I got to tell you, if I got a big football game and I one of my wide receivers, I've got no problem. Like, I'll line Michael Irvin up next to Jerry Rice. You know what I'm saying? Like, to me, Michael Irvin's one of the all-time greats. Not getting enough love here. And a guy that's a perfect example of, at you know, and when he came into the NFL, some NFL guy told him, you're not NFL fast. You know, that's, you know, you're it's a problem. You don't have, you're not NFL fast. And Michael Irvin told him, I might not be NFL fast, but I'm football fast. And he talked about, like, being fast at the combine and stuff. Now, Michael Irvin's speed was never a problem on the field. Got open a hell of a lot against fast guys. Won everywhere he was. Great, great wide receiver. Like, dude, I'm a Bills fan. Like, I have nightmares about Michael Irvin. Like, going up and just taunting us. You know what I mean? Like, the dude was unstoppable, George.
Michael Irvin understood the game of football. How to play wide receiver. How to use his body.
Great football IQ. You're right.
I mean, and yes, he pushed off. He knew how to do that and get away with it. Absolutely. He was great
at that. He was one of the first ones to call, like, now he started the old, come on, that's pass interference after every play that he didn't get to get the ball to catch, right? Yeah.
And he made a living out of that. He did. He was football fast, not fast. He wasn't going to blow by the cornerback, blow by the safety, but he knew how to run his routes. He knew where to get where he had to go, and he knew how to use his size and his speed. And he was such a great leader. Great leader for that team back in the 90s. I love Michael Irvin, one of my favorite players ever. I don't have a top five. I don't think you could quite consider him over the guys we've mentioned here.
No,
I have
that's the
overall
thing.
I have him top 10, number 8.
I'll tell you, I've got a guy that you didn't bring up that it's to me, it's not debatable. And I don't think he gets his just due because he doesn't talk a lot. He's not in the media. And now the only time you ever hear about him is when someone says, oh my God, Marvin Harrison threatened to crack my skull with a baseball bat. or you hear a story about some guy walks into the Philly police station and says, Marvin Harrison's trying to kill me. Right? Like Marvin Harrison. And it's funny because remember at the time, Michael Irvin was the guy with the hookers and remember, you know, the White House. The Dallas Cowboys had a house called the White House. It was called the White House because of all the cocaine.
Back in the 90s, man, if there was social media back in the 90s, the Cowboys would have dominated this for what they would do.
They would have been suspended because they would have been they would have been caught. The Cowboys used to party their asses off and everyone knew it. They didn't hide it. Everyone knew it. Hey, yeah, we do blow and we're still going to beat you. Like, they loved it. They were like the modern day Raiders type of thing. Michael Irvin, I heard an interview. I'm a big Michael Irvin fan, so I heard an interview with him. I just like his honesty. I love his interviews and stuff. And someone said, Michael, I'm a big fan of yours. He was taking calls, like, type thing. And he was like, Michael, I'm a big fan of yours, but, you know, I just wonder if you didn't drink and do drugs like you did, like, how much more of a success could you have been? And Irvin sort of pauses and he goes, I've made mistakes in my life. And he goes, you know, I'm not the perfect person, but he goes, as far as football is concerned, he's basically stating, I'm not great. I've cheated on my wife. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, as far as football is concerned, he goes, I really don't know. He goes, I won a national championship and 3 Super Bowls. He goes, I don't really know how much more of a success I could have been. He raised a very good point. Like, he's at the top of the chain. But to me, Marvin Harrison's a top 5 all-time wide receiver. Like, how is he not, bro? How is he not?
I mean, I don't even have him in my top 10. He's just outside my top 10.
How is that?
It might, maybe because bias was everything that's happened, that he's might have done, has been accused of.
It doesn't change anything. I agree.
And
he's never been charged with anything. So what? You better pay your rent on time. Like, if your wife, you don't know the story, Marvin Harrison owns like apartment
buildings. He's poorly from Goodfellas. F you, yeah. Pay me.
Yeah. He owns apartment buildings and he's old school. Like, he shows up with a baseball bat if you don't have his rent. Like, for real. There's like a video of Marvin Harrison with a bat saying, where's the rent? Like, and he also owns a car wash that's sort of like out of the TV show Breaking Bad, that people are like, I don't know what goes on in that car wash, but some weird stuff's coming out of there. And like, basically, like, Marvin Harrison like might have shot someone or threatened to kill someone and whatever. Whatever it is, Harrison's he's chilled out a bit because he hasn't been in the news for a couple of years. But I was going to say, he had the squeaky clean rep, George, right at the time, him and Peyton Manning.
Yeah, and then it all fell to crap as soon as he left the NFL. Funny how that works out, right? When the machine's not working for you anymore. And
if people don't talk, they think they're a class act. It's like, well, he's not. He doesn't rock the boat. He doesn't say anything. Marvin Harrison never spoke, but it doesn't mean he still didn't want to kill you. Like, I say this about one of my favorite guys, Kawhi Leonard. People are like, Kawhi Leonard's so cool. He never says anything bad about anyone. It's like, because, yeah, he doesn't talk, but it doesn't mean he's the nicest guy in the world. You know what I'm saying? Like, we were talking about the other day, Eddie Murray never spoke. Eddie Murray hates everybody.
Don't we always see it in the newspapers when you read about something happening in the neighborhood? Oh, he was quiet. Well, it's the quiet ones you got to watch, right? It's
the old saying. Yeah. You're right. It's always, I'm always showing you, he was so quiet. He never said anything to anyone. I can't believe he did this. Yeah, exactly. He hated you all. That's why he never talked to you.
Yeah, I think with Marvin, another thing that might go against Harrison, once again, not his fault. A lot of receivers are the same thing. Is he played in a pass-happy offense, right? Manning throwing the ball over the place.
Yeah, but were they a pass? They were a pass-heavy offense because he was so good.
All right, listen. I don't think it's Marvin Harrison. Listen, he's number, I think, 12 for me. 12 on my list, but I don't think I get considered top five. Once again, Morris, Rice, Jones. Who are you taking out? You taking Larry Fitzgerald out, I guess?
Yes. I'm taking Calvin Johnson out.
I'm not taking Calvin Johnson out. I'm not going to. The only thing I penalize against
him. He didn't play long enough. I'm going to punish him for that.
All right. And I do agree with that. I do think our players should be penalized.
I'm going to punish. You can't be. You're great. But nah, I'm going to go with some of these other guys. Like even T.O., even Terrell Owens. T.O. played in the Super Bowl on one leg. You know what I'm saying? Like there's guys like T.O. would have played and like. I don't judge Calvin Johnson for walking away. I'd say suck it to the Detroit Lions, too, if I was a Detroit Lion. Like, there's a pattern here between him and Barry Sanders. You know what I'm saying?
There is.
But I can't make him top five because of it.
And I don't blame you for that because I know I penalize players as well. Well, one of the most important abilities, availability. And if you don't want to play, well, then you're not available. And there's something to be said for that. I don't believe Terrell Davis should be in the Hall of Fame in football because he didn't play long enough.
What about Kurt Warner then? Kurt Warner, like.
I'm 50-50.
Is Kurt Warner an NFL Hall of Famer? Put it this way. If he wasn't such a nice guy and the big religious guy that he is, he's not in the Hall of Fame. Like if Kurt Warner is a jerk, like Kurt Warner is a nice guy. He's likable, right? He is likable. If he's a jerk, he's not in the Hall of Fame.
I would agree because he's that those kind of numbers where it's borderline numbers, maybe Hall of Fame, maybe not. In my mind, whenever it's maybe, then it's not.
I just want to say this for Marvin Harrison here. Ranks fifth in NFL history in receptions with 1,102. Receiving touchdowns, 128. NFL season, single season record of 143 catches. NFL record. 8 straight seasons with 1,000 plus yards and 10 plus touchdowns. Super Bowl champion, 4 straight years of 100 receptions, second most all time, 8 straight 1,000 yard seasons, third longest streak all time by a wide receiver, 8 straight Pro Bowls, tied for 4th in NFL history amongst NFL's Pro Bowls. Dude, like, I could go on. Marvin Harris is a top 5 wide receiver. I'm putting my foot down, Kurtz, on this one.
I'm not taking Fitz.
Otherwise,
out.
We're coming. I'm coming with Marvin to your house then.
Then he's in. If you come to Marvin, my house, he's in. Marvin. No
Let
problem.
Me go on Twitter right now at Marvin Harrison, doing show with George Kurtz. He says you suck. He says you suck. You don't belong.
But I don't know your rent. I don't know your rent, Marvin. I paid. I'm good.
Says Kurtz, Long Island, New York. I'm gonna like punch it in. Did you know all those numbers? I know you know Marvin Harrison. I know you watch Marvin Harrison, but when you hear those numbers, it's like, damn, pretty impressive.
But we get every receiver we're talking about here, we're going to have numbers like that. Everyone.
No.
Come on, Fitzgerald is up there in all those numbers, too. Maybe not the touchdowns, you know, but every other number.
Fitzgerald doesn't belong. Harrison's better than Fitzgerald.
I think I'm drafting Fitzgerald.
Harrison was unstoppable.
I'm not saying I wouldn't want him on my team. I would. But top five, I think I'd rather have – I don't think I had Fitzgerald over him. And I certainly had Calvin Johnson over him.
And so, it's interesting. Marvin Harrison made the all-NFL team. Remember last year they just did this recently?
Yes.
He's on the list. For the record, it's Jerry Rice, Raymond Berry, Don Hudson, Paul Warfield, Lance Allworth, Randy Moss, Larry Fitzgerald, Steve Largent. Steve Largent. Yeah, it's a little bit of a reach.
It is.
Marvin Harrison, Elroy Hirsch. I remember, like, people were flipping out. They didn't, like, give respect to the old guys. I remember people were bitching. They were like, there's no way Paul Warfield, Lance Allworth's better than Julio Jones. What about Julio Jones? Like, what do you think of that? Like, out of the modern guys, does he belong? He seems to be the modern guy that NFL wide receivers look up to.
I don't think
I think Hopkins is better than Jones. I like Hopkins better. I think Hopkins is the best receiver in the NFL.
I no argument with you. I think when I was thinking top three wide receivers in the NFL right now, I'm talking about this with Mike Blewett, Jones didn't come up for me. You know, so I don't know if I'd put Jones is top five easy, but he's hurt all the time.
Hopkins, Michael Thomas.
Devontae Adams.
You got Devontae Adams, huh?
I like Devontae Adams. I mean, he's available. Once again, I mean, Jones is hurt every year. He's always got the heel. Always got the foot injury.
I know.
That annoys the hell out of me. Not that it's his fault.
Jones
I'm not saying
doesn't
he's
make
pretty.
Big catches. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have that feather in the cap. Like, I remember that touchdown. Like you know what I'm saying? Like, T.O. had that touchdown in the playoffs against the Packers. Boom, makes the catch, gets nailed, hangs onto the ball. Dude, the Philadelphia Eagles would never win the damn Super Bowl if Julio Jones doesn't fall down on the fourth down.
Yeah. He doesn't catch touchdowns at all. Jones doesn't catch touchdowns at all. May not be his fault. Maybe that's not the average. Maybe Ryan doesn't look for him. He doesn't catch touchdowns at all. So I can't have him in this conversation, no. I could have him for the NFL, but current NFL, but not top five.
All right, so I'm going to go Randy Moss, Jerry Rice, Marvin Harrison. It's tough.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Get on the grid, Sports Grid. I am Gabriel Morenzi, but you already know that. But let's welcome our guest right now, Matt Mershell of the Orlando Sentinel. Let's talk some college football. You know, the other day we were very excited. We saw FanDuel posting some numbers, and this is as early as you're going to get. Normally you get point spreads in like June for college football. And we're all sort of under the assumption that, well, everything's going to be fine by the time fall comes around. yet. And I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but I know you talk to a lot of coaches, Matt. You talk to ADs, you talk to coaches, etc. And they're talking about this. I saw Bronco Mendenhall talking about a potential, yeah, we're prepping for maybe a partial season. Mac Brown says it's a distinct possibility. I read Dennis Dodd wrote a great article, and he interviewed, I want to get the name right here, Warren Zola. Warren Zola, a respected expert on sports law and executive director of Boston College Carroll School of Management, says, I'm not trying to be overly pessimistic, but I'm doubtful we're even going to have a 2020 football season, NFL or college. You know, I don't want to be the Grim Reaper here, Matt, but what are you hearing when you talk to people?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of concern, you know, when it comes to looking forward to the idea of kicking things off the start of September, which is what we're supposed to be doing. You know, because for these coaches, for these players, they don't know what's going to happen over the next couple weeks, the next couple months, to be honest with you, whether or not we're going to get back to some sense of normalcy, you know, in April or May. We know, obviously, the spring camps are all canceled. They're not taking part in any of that. Coaches have told me it takes time to get players into shape, get them back to ready to get things going. You know, Brian Kelly, I know last night said that, you know, if they don't get kicking things off in July 1st, if they don't get back to normalcy on July 1st, he's not sure this is going to happen. And you know, I think a lot of coaches and ADs are feeling that way. They don't want to be doom and gloom, don't get me wrong, but they also realize that they have no control over this. They don't know when things are going to get back to things. And I think that's got to be a concern. You know, Mac Brown talked about, will this be a case where maybe, you know, we play the full season, or maybe we just play conference games. Maybe they eliminate that early part of the schedule with a non-conference and you go with the conference games. Either way, whatever happens in this situation, if we don't get back to some normalcy, I think you're going to see this really have a direct financial impact on a lot of these schools, a lot of these programs.
A massive financial impact. And listen, it's not like the NBA, you know, doesn't want to have fans in the building. But financially, Matt, it's pocket change to them. You know what I mean? It's an arena. They have such big TV contracts. College football, I understand the TV revenue is big, but at the same point in time, explain to the viewers, it is such a gate-driven revenue situation. Talking about selling 100,000 tickets. If Michigan doesn't sell 100,000 tickets six, seven times in a year, how much money is that? You know, $100 million, $150? Like, you know, from the university standpoint. And let's be real, Matt. How do you put 100,000 fans on a hot day in Mississippi in September together in a stadium? I'm just saying, like, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. We're not doctors, Matt, but I'm just being realistic. Like, if we play, I think there's a distinct possibility. There's no fans even if we play.
Yeah, I would think that's probably true. I think early on, especially, I think you're not going to see a lot of fans. And I also think, too, even if they open the gates to fans in, let's not forget, there are going to be some people who could be very leery about the idea of spending an afternoon, a Saturday afternoon, with 100,000 other people around them. They may not want to go back to stadiums like that, especially now the fact that you can watch most games on television. You can watch everything through streaming sites. You can do all that now. It's not like you have to be there in person and not be able to see it. So I think that's going to be interesting. You're right about the financial impact. Listen, you know, over 80% of the football programs or schools across the country, their athletic department revenue is based on the football money. It's based on what they generate from the football money. It's the power that drives the economic bus for these programs. So if you don't have that financial impact coming in, that money coming in, that kind of trickles down to everywhere else. That could also mean that schools have to eventually end up cutting non-revenue generating sports. You know, most of the sports that colleges have on campus aren't revenue generating sports. They lean on the help of football. So if they don't have football, that's going to be a big, huge impact. So I think those are things that if we get to the point where we're talking about canceling the season or even canceling part of it, it's going to have a very deep trickle down effect.
Guys, to put it in perspective, the Georgia Bulldogs, their athletic budget is $176 million a year. That's to fund everything, to fund all the sports. The football team brings in $141 million of it. So, like, I think we sort of answered the question for ourselves. So business is going on, though, and I see teams are going about their business as far as recruiting is concerned. It's a unique situation. And it's funny, Matt, so you have, and that's one of the favorite things of this gig that I have. I love talking to coaches. I just love, like, picking their brains and, you know, even off the air and just getting, you know, stories, et cetera. And you and I both know a lot of these old coaches, they freaking hate social media, man. They don't know what Twitter is. What's that Twitter stuff? I don't know. And they're not lying, right? Facebook, what? Yeah, my wife, I sort of see her on. I don't really know much about it. TikTok. They are TikTok. They think it's a breath mint. Nowadays, coaches, they don't have a choice. They're going to have to talk to kids. They can't go to the kitchen right now. They don't have a choice but to get on FaceTime and talk to players.
Yeah, very much so. It's funny, Mac Brown talked about this, you know, that he spent more time on Zoom the last couple of weeks than he has with his wife. You know, I mean, it's just, and a lot of these guys, especially their assistant coaches, they don't understand what this, you know, what the video conferencing apps are. They're not used to using that sort of thing. So they've had to do a lot of training and catching up, you know, and FaceTiming with their players. But I think in the long run, this is going to kind of benefit them because in some ways they're catching up with some of the age kind of separation with the players. They're able to connect with their players now face to face. And I think that's something that a lot of coaches and ADs have told me has been very important, especially for the mental aspect of everything. They want to be able to make sure that their players understand, listen, I'm here. You can see me. I could see you. If you're struggling, let me know. If I'm, you know, I think that's what's going on. But it's funny, as you said, to hear these coaches talk about, you know, dealing with social media. I talked to the Florida State strength and conditioning coach yesterday who told me that he uses social media to try to kind of see what his players are doing. What are they doing working out? What kind of things are they doing? And he said, that's great. That helps motivate not only himself, but it motivates his teammates because they see them on there doing things. They're not going to be lazy. So I think all in all, we're seeing because of this kind of side effect of this kind of self-isolation is the fact that more and more people are turning to technology to help kind of benefit themselves.
So, you know, coaches are in a unique situation. They're aware, they're realists, but at the same point in time, they also, they're preparing, they've done their recruiting, et cetera. The commitments are starting to come in right now. What stood out to you? What's a program? Let's say, you know, forget we're in a perfect world right now. We're playing football. Everything's great. You know, I was looking at the odds of FanDuel and Clemson. It's basically Clemson, Ohio State, Bama, and then there's a drop off to everyone else. And can Bama just keep the, you know, are the wheels just going to keep moving for Alabama right now? Ohio State seems to me like the power that's knocking on the door ready to win a championship. Do you get that feeling right now?
Yeah, I do. I think those are the four or five right now that are really at the top of their game right now. You talked about Alabama, obviously, what they've been able to do. Clemson has been just there right as well. You know, Ohio State continued with Ryan Day. They just haven't missed a beat, even with Urban Meyer's retirement. You know,
every player is better, Matt. It bothers me. I'm a Michigan fan. I'll never forget. I'm a lifelong Michigan fan. And I never root for players to get hurt. I'm not that guy. I like all players. I respect everybody. But in the Michigan-Ohio State game, all right, JT Barrett goes down. I didn't want the kid to be hurt, but I was like, you know what? Finally, they have some bad luck when they play us. Took me one pass, Matt. One pass to see Dwayne Haskins. I'm like, oh, my God, this kid's better. And then it's like Haskins is gone and Fields is better than Haskins. I can't take it anymore.
Yeah, everything. What's amazing to me, and I think a lot of people, especially older fans, understand this, is it used to be when players would take the time off in the summertime, they would go to jobs or do things like that or stay home and rest. These guys aren't doing that now. This is a 365-day-a-year career for these players. So the younger guys who are coming in behind some of these older guys, they've spent months and months and months working with quarterback coaches. They've been going to camps. They've been trying to, you know, get better and better. So when a coach gets a freshman on his staff, on his roster, these guys aren't technically freshmen. They've been playing football for so long, they're almost like walking in as a junior, senior. That's how you saw Fields, who everyone talked about. He stepped right away, got in there, and played so well. I think you're going to see that more and more with a lot of these players. Is they're not just taking time off and being happy with what they're at. They want to continue to improve and get better. They see what kind of payoff that will get. That's why you're seeing guys behind that. And programs like Ohio State get richer every year. They continue to find guys, whether through the transfer portal or recruiting, who are able to step up and fill those roles.
You know, that's amazing to me, too, about college football. We always get locked into the year before, right? You know, I remember, you know, the Florida Gators, the powerful team. Oh, they're never going to lose. Boom, they lose, right? Every time you think that team is invincible or a player, you want to hand a player the Heisman. Like a great example is Justin Fields, the Heisman favorite, going along with Trevor Lawrence. But how many times have you seen, Matt, a kid come out of nowhere and he's the new it guy in college football, right? I mean, look, it was, 13 months ago, Trevor Lawrence could start in the NFL right now, right? Teams would tank right now for Trevor Lawrence. suddenly Joe Burrow's the it guy, right? Things change fast in college football, don't they? You're the big man on campus till you're not.
Yeah, pretty much. And I think a lot, too, is you're seeing coaches spending more time bringing in good quality assistants to help out. That was Joe Burrow. If you told me 15 months ago that Joe Burrow was going to win the Heisman and they were going to win the national championship, I would have been like laughing at you because I said, there's no way.
You know who told me, Matt? You know, I swear who told me? Phil Steele.
Really?
I swear to God, we had Phil Steele on the show. It was like last August. I said, Phil, Heisman, it's always someone that comes out of nowhere that wins the Heisman. I said, who do we look at this year? He said, Gabe, you know, people are going to laugh. And exactly what he said. He goes, people are going to laugh. He goes, Joe Burrow's 200-1 to win the Heisman. And Phil Steele says, watch out for LSU. They're going to surprise people this year. And that's why he's Phil Steele, right?
Yeah. And you said, then look what happened to Joe Burrow. He got better because they knew the system worked for him. That's what happens. You see these guys that come in there and they just kind of click with somebody. Johnny Manziel, whoever it is, they come in and they click with whatever the coaching staff is. They figure out how to utilize that guy. And then all of a sudden they come out. So I've never been a big believer of whoever the favorite is going in, you know, in July is going to be the guy who wins it all, because I think there's just too much stuff goes on in this game to really kind of make that happen. That's why I never vote for the Heisman until it's the very last moment, because you know things can change at the very, you know, things can change that rapidly.
So on Twitter, I saw you've been writing a lot about Florida State as of late, talking to FSU. And I think it's an exciting time, isn't it, in the state of Florida for college football right now, in which Florida State feels it has that feel that they got their guy. You know, we don't know yet, but it just has that feel. All right, they've got their guy right now. Norvell's all business. He's been successful. Seems like a good fit for the school. I've always been a big Dan Mullen guy. You know what I mean? I think Dan Mullen's a great coach. I think Florida are knocking on the door to a potential playoff team this year. I think they're that good. And if on the Miami Hurricanes, I'm very excited about the quarterback. We're talking about quarterbacks and situations right now with De'Aaron King. Talk to me about the state of Florida and these football teams right now.
Yeah, the state of Florida has been really well right now when it comes to football, and I think there's a lot of, you know, excitement, anticipation. You mentioned Dan Mullen in Florida. I agree with you. I think this is the year. I think they beat Georgia. I think they get themselves into that discussion about being maybe into the semifinals, the college football playoff semifinals. Yeah. You look at what Mike Norvell's done. He's the guy who's had success at other places he's been at, specifically Memphis the last couple of years. He's got a lot of talent now around him. A lot of enthusiasm. His coaching staff is really well put together. I think they can make a strong comeback this year. You mentioned Manny Diaz. I think this is a make or break year for Manny Diaz. There's a lot of, I hate to say that in year two, but there was a lot of expectation last year. They really fell short, but he brings in a guy like De'Aaron King. He brings in a guy like Quincy Roche, who was the American Athletic Conference Defender of the Year last year as a transfer. That was huge for them. This is a program, I think, right now that's on the cusp as well. And then you look around, UCF in our backyard here, which is obviously has done some things over the last couple of years. They continue to be stronger. USF brings in, you know, a guy like Jeff Scott from Clemson, who's really looking forward to kind of maybe resurrecting that program. So all around the state, I think there are these programs right now that are just right there, ready and ripe to have some sort of success. And I think a lot of that is because of the coaching, and a lot of it is because of the talent that is here in the state of Florida. These schools now are keeping these kids here, whereas maybe about 5 or 6 years ago, these kids would want to go to Ohio State, the Michigans, the Penn States, maybe out west to the Pac-12, maybe somewhere to Oklahoma. Now they're staying put and they want to stay for some of these coaches.
And I always tell people this. We'll have about 3 minutes, and I'm really enjoying talking college football with you, Matt. I always tell people this. Like, if you're Florida, it's better if Florida State is good too. It's better if Miami is good too. I always tell people, what's across the street from a gas station? Another gas station. You know what I'm saying? Like, it leads... Like you said, if everyone sucks, and for a couple of years, it kind of got flat, you know, in Florida. Mm-hmm. If everyone's bad, then the kids are like, I don't care about playing in that FSU Miami game. That's not a game of century anymore. I'm going to LSU. No, Saban called me. I'm going to Alabama. I'm getting out of the state. I'm going to Georgia. I'm going across state line here. I'm going to Georgia. But if suddenly one team is good, then the other team is good, then that rivalry is back. It's on TV. It leads to recruiting. I think the competition is good. I think if one of them gets better, it helps the other ones. I really believe that.
Yeah, very much so. I think that's true. You know, it used to be growing up here, like a lot of states, like Texas and California, you know, a kid would grow up and he would either think, I'm going to Florida, I'm going to Florida State, or I'm going to Miami.
Yeah, it was dead set, right? Yeah.
And it was dead set, right? Or your dad went there or whatever was going on.
Now they pick and choose who's better.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. But I think having those teams be good, it's so good for the state of Florida. I think you're seeing so much excitement there. You know, I remember those, I've covered those Florida State Miami games. Those were great games. I covered some of the Florida FSU games. Great games, you know, things that fans really kind of were on their seats about. We haven't had that for a couple of years now, but I think it's going to get back to being there. I think that's good for recruiting. I think it's good for the state. And like I said, I think it keeps the kids here because we've had a lot of talented playmakers here who went off somewhere else. And I've talked to some coaches here in the state who just lamented on the fact that they lost those kids because that's the talent they could have had here and should have had here, but things weren't necessarily going as well as they could have been going.
And, you know, they say there's certain markets that they say, you know, the NBA is stronger if the Knicks are good. You know what I'm saying? They're better. They're stronger if the Lakers are good. College football, to me, Florida is such a big part of it. I miss it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I still embrace it. I love the rivalry still, the intensity and the passion. But, you know, I think it could be big things ahead for the state of Florida coming up this year, especially the Florida Gators. Matt, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us. Look forward to talking college football with you again, man.
No problem. Thank you. Stay safe, okay?
There's Matt Mercell with us. Orlando Sentinel. Get on the grid, sports grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.